Oh, the daybells. From competency issues to an additional request to sever, as well as questions about the constitutionality of the death penalty, there's been a lot happening in this case. Katie and Christy bring you up to speed.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the True Crime Squad. I'm Christy Brower, here with my sister, co-host, and partner in crime, Katie Weaver. Hey, Katie.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's going well.
I mean, it's Monday.
It's definitely beginning to look a bit like Christmas. Or a lot like Christmas. Yeah. Lots of snow.
Lots of snow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And cold. Gorgeous. And I don't know. I'll take it. I don't mind it, honestly.
Yep.
There will come a time, probably January, end of January, we'll be bitching about this. But right now, it's okay.
Right now, it looks like it's supposed to at Christmas time, at the holidays.
That's the thing. When it's supposed to be like this, then it's okay. The problem we have is that the weather has changed here so much from the time we were little kids to now that it's hard to know even what to expect.
You know, I shared a picture to my kids last night of, it's actually close to Yellowstone, but it's these cars driving down a road that have several feet of snow, you know, piled up on both sides. So it's like a car tunnel.
Yeah.
And I said, this is how Teton Valley looked when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And my son said, I can't even believe that's true. It doesn't look anything like that now. And I said, that's true. A lot has changed. But when we were little, our parents lived on a pig farm. Our grandparents owned a pig farm, and we lived down in the hollow in a very old double wide trailer. And when we were kids, when we were really little kids, the snow would get as tall as our house. It would cover the swing set. You could go outside and play and literally walk on top of the swing set. And driving down the road was just like that. It was like driving in a tunnel. You couldn't really run off the road because
you just hit snow.
But you could get lost in whiteouts easily. Anyway, it was crazy.
Yeah.
And it's nothing like that now. But that's exactly what it looked like when we were little. Yeah.
Well, and it was a big deal because we lived on a private road.
Yeah.
We had our own cat that was a snowplow.
Yeah.
To plow us out from our house and our grandparents' house and then out to the highway because the county did not plow us.
No, and a lot of
that was always a little scary too.
Truly. But a lot of the farmers did have equipment like that and they'd take care of each other.
Yep.
After a big snow, everybody would be out in their tractors cleaning up the roads and the private roads and making sure everyone was okay and accounted for. It's just what they did. It was what they had to do.
Yeah. Well, our dad worked as a barber. And there were a lot of times in the winter when he could not drive a vehicle back to the house. So he would park his vehicle at our great aunt and uncle's house on the highway, and he would ride a snow machine back down to the farm and home. It was crazy. So,
I wonder our mom was so lonely and bored and hated it up there so much.
Right.
She came from Vegas.
Yeah.
Can you imagine coming from Vegas to that ish?
I can't. Thinking about it now with little kids and you can't even get out, you know? Yeah, no, cannot imagine.
Mm-mm.
So, you know, we always have a lot of opinions about the weather, and that's probably why. Well, this is our Monday episode, and this is a special update show. Occasionally we do these where we don't have any segments. We're just on one topic. It's been since July that we did an update on the Daybell Vallow Daybell Vallow case. And we've talked about it a lot in case updates and things, but we like to periodically sum up what's happened since the last time we did a full episode about this, mm-hmm. because there is so much in this case. And so, of course, we're talking about Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow Daybell, who are a married couple, mm-hmm. we think, who have been charged with the murders of Lori's two children, Tylee Ryan mm-hmm. and JJ Vallow. No, yes, Vallow. That's correct. The last yep. names in this case. And then also with the death of Chad's wife, Tammy Daybell. Mm-hmm. And this has been going on for 3 years now here in our community.
Yep.
And so we're going to just start with, you know, if you follow us, if you're on this podcast with us, you know the lead up to all of it. We're not going to recap the whole beginning, but we're just going to start in July of 2022, the last time we did one of these episodes. I'm going to tell you what's happened since July, what's been happening. Because it's a lot of just court procedural stuff at this point.
And but lots of back and forth on that.
Yeah. And lots of ups and downs. We're going to have a trial. We're not going to have a trial, you know, that kind of thing. So we're just going to begin there and move our way all the way up to December of 2022 and give you an idea of where we're at with this really unfathomable situation. So in July, since our last episode, one of the things that happened is that there was a discussion about DNA.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and this has been very heated. It's come up several times. I still don't know if it's actually, if the testing has actually been done.
There's no talk that it has, but of course we might not know.
Because so many things are sealed in this case, and there's a lot of question about the legality of that mm-hmm. and how this is all being handled. But what we know is that there are small amounts of DNA. And unfortunately, they're very small, which means that testing will be consumptive.
Yeah.
And that means that the DNA cannot be retested. So if you test it once, it's gone. Mm-hmm. And so no testing has occurred yet because, and maybe it has now, we don't know. But there, the prosecution again requested being able to test hairs on duct tape inside a body bag that was used to transport the remains of JJ. Mm-hmm. Ridge detailer fingerprints on the adhesive side of tape associated with JJ's body. Mm-hmm. Small dark spots on the handles of a shovel and pickaxe that were recovered from the barn in the backyard that may or may not be blood.
Yeah.
Swabs.
And if you're wondering why a pickaxe, just remember what happened to Tylee.
Yes. Swabs of tape areas. And swabs from fingernails from JJ's right hand that were obtained during his autopsy. So there was a whole situation about how to do that in a way that protects the evidence and that is fair to the defense. Because usually what the defense wants to do is after the prosecution has tested it, they want their shot at it.
Yeah.
Well, there's not going to be a second shot at these. Mm-hmm. There's not enough evidence. So there was a lot of discussion around an independent lab and the defense attorneys being able to have their own experts physically present or present by Zoom or whatever mm-hmm. to witness the testing mm-hmm. so that they're comfortable that everything was done professionally and there was no tampering and all that jazz. So we've heard lots of argument about that. And then we've heard nothing.
Yep.
Which maybe we wouldn't, frankly. Because this case has not gone to trial yet, the testing may have occurred.
Right. Because essentially what the judge said was, yes, the testing can happen. Yes, the defense can have their witness in the room. And yes, the show must go on. Right. But then the Idaho State Lab, the state forensic lab in Idaho, in the Boise area, I think in Meridian, said, we don't want to do it. They said, this is, we don't have the room in our facility to accommodate cameras and extra people. And they acted kind of nervous about it. Like maybe we don't mm-hmm. want to be on the hook for this consumptive DNA. If something happens, we don't want to do it. But then the defense came back and said, okay, here's our witness here's our expert. Mm-hmm. And he is a professor at Boise State University mm-hmm. who I believe the lab knows well. And they said, oh, well, if that's who's coming, now we can do it here. That's fine.
Yeah.
So we still don't know if they did do it there. We don't know. Yeah.
I think we're to assume they did because there hasn't been any more legal fighting about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, as we've talked about so many times, Idaho doesn't get cases like this. This is very new.
Yeah.
And we don't have, what do we have? Maybe two crime labs. Like, I think there's one in Northern Idaho and then there's the one in Boise.
Yeah.
So it's not as though this is like regular day-to-day operations for them. It isn't.
Right.
So I can see where their hesitancy was, but I'm glad that at least the expert coming in was someone that they knew and were familiar with and were comfortable with.
Yeah.
I think at this point we are to assume that this did in fact occur. Or I think that the prosecution would be back in court going, we need this DNA, you know?
Well, I mean, the lawyers that watched this case closely were dumbfounded that that has not been done yet. That technically they should have been, we should be going to trial in 4 weeks from now.
Yeah.
And that has not been done, you know?
Yeah.
So I would assume it has too, but yeah, it that's something that's taken a really long time. And you would think like DNA evidence, those are smoking guns.
Right.
You
that's
know?
So, so very important to this case.
I'll also say that when the first news of the kids being found came out and that there was a description of how JJ was wrapped in multiple trash bags with duct tape wrapped all the way around his body, we had said all along, there's your DNA. It'll be right there. It is impossible to wrap someone or wrap something up in that much duct tape and not have some DNA on it. It's just impossible.
DNA, not have fingerprints, those things, duct tape is pretty notorious for that.
But the pickaxe, the shovel, and JJ's fingernails were all brand new news.
Yes. That was stuff we did not know prior that they had.
Yep.
So every time something like this happens, we get a little bit deeper glimpse into the evidence against Lori and Chad.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then we roll forward to, and we did stream this episode, this hearing in one of our episodes, but they were in court. Lori and her attorneys were in court because the attorneys had some concerns about the language in the indictment that came down from the grand jury. And they wanted the judge to go back to the grand jury and ask for clarification on their language. Because what they'd done is they'd combined some of the things that they were charged with. They had combined two different things in the same charge. And the one defense attorney particularly, because Lori now has two defense attorneys. And these are defense attorneys who have actually defended death penalty cases before.
Yeah.
It was particularly John Thomas who was concerned about this, particularly one of the counts one and three were labeled like this: conspiracy to commit first degree murder and grand theft by deception. And he said that was confusing because what if you were found guilty of one and not the other? And the judge said, I don't think this is confusing as you want it to be. You seem to be the only one who is confused here and did not grant that to, you know, didn't grant permission to go back.
In fact, that's exactly what Rob Wood said in his argument. He said, Judge, I'm not confused. You're not confused. I think the only one confused here is Mr. Thomas.
Yeah.
The judge agreed.
Yeah, the judge did agree. So they didn't go back there. He said, it doesn't matter. All of that can be handled when it comes to sentencing, that it's not as big of a deal as, you know, they're making it out to be. But we have seen some pretty interesting things, you know, come out of this now that Lori has real attorneys, you know.
Attorneys
that really understand what they're doing versus Mark Means, who basically just... was bothersome to the court on a regular basis.
Yeah. But this was the trip to court in which Lori put on quite a show.
Oh boy.
And court TV, whether they meant to or not, has cost all of us greatly.
Yes.
In the way they were in charge of being the cameras in the room at that point. and they chose to put a camera directly on Lori. Now, to be fair to them, they had to submit their schematic for where the cameras were going to go in the courtroom beforehand, and the judge did approve it. Yeah. Lori's lawyers were very unhappy, and I think that you can see why.
Yeah.
Lori smiled, giggled, laughed, seemed to interact with people who weren't there.
Wore this very juvenile, half partial pony on the top of her head. Her hair was weird. She looked really not well.
Put on quite a show all the way into the police car when she left, looking like she felt like she was a celebrity with the paparazzi in her face with cameras.
She was pretty much having the time of her life, unfortunately.
People were outraged. There was a moment where her son's name was said, and she flashed one of those winning smiles, and people were furious. She's taking this as a joke. She's not taking it seriously. She actually thinks this is funny. We don't believe that was what was actually happening at all. Mm-hmm. However, her attorneys came back to the court and said that was terrible, completely unfair. The camera being on her face the whole time made it so that we could have had a violation of attorney-client privilege as we were trying to talk to her, because they didn't know the camera was on her face the whole time. To be fair, that doesn't seem to have actually happened, but they were pissed. And honestly, for good reason. The whole time this was happening, we were asking, why is that camera only on Lori's face? We want to see the whole courtroom. We want to see the judge. We want to see Rob Wood. We want to see everything that's happening. But nearly all of it was just on Lori acting completely bonkers. Because of that, they filed a brief with the court asking to remove all cameras from the courtroom. And that was approved. And that sucks.
Yes. That means no more live stream.
And their concern is, of course, that this could be muddying the waters yet again of the jury pool and affecting public opinion about Lori because of her behavior. And it did. It definitely did.
It was everywhere. I will admit, we showed up at our update show with both of us wearing the same hoodie because we were like, this does not seem like a person who is well in the head to show up at court like this. So yeah, that was a rough moment, particularly because live streaming has really been the only way for us to really know what's going on. I mean, we could physically attend these hearings. We haven't because COVID is still very much a thing in our community, and it is not being taken particularly seriously, and our vaccination rates are low. And Katie and I are both immune compromised. We have both had COVID before and We really cannot risk getting it again. So we have relied on these live streams for our own protection, but also to share this information with all of you. So we've had to go to new ways of keeping track of what's going on with the case because of that.
Yeah. It sucks.
Yeah, it does. It does. Another thing that has sucked. Here we go. So on September 5th, a news story broke that Colby Ryan, Lori's only living child, had been arrested for sexual assault against his wife in Maricopa County in Arizona. This was right before the release of the Netflix special Sins of Our Mother that heavily featured Colby was released on Netflix.
Like a week before.
Yeah, it was right before. And it was, this was rough. You know, Colby has taken a lot of scrutiny and a lot of criticism. And, you know, I mean, if he committed these crimes, then he committed these crimes.
Right.
But we have had some empathy for this kid because he has been through hell.
Yeah.
Now,
I was raised by Lori, for God's sake. Yeah.
So almost as quickly as those charges happened, they were dropped.
Yeah. Like everybody reported on them and, you know, it was a big thing. And then a day or two later, they were gone. Yeah.
Yeah. And we've not heard anything else about that. And we
What we knew at the time is that he and his wife were separated.
Yes.
And that she had, you know, reported that he came over for a date, basically, and that he had sexually assaulted her. And then, yeah, 2 days later, the charges were dropped. And yes, not another peep has been uttered. No. So no saying what's going on with that family. Well, and again, we still wish them the best. They have been through a terrible thing.
Absolutely.
But yes, of course, if Colby's out sexually assaulting anybody, he should certainly be held accountable for that.
For sure. One of the things that his wife said was, I had no idea it would blow up like this. I had no idea this would become national news immediately. Because that's the thing. Everything that happens with this case becomes national news immediately. Mm-hmm. We know that. We've been watching it from the very beginning.
Yeah.
And I think for her, she realized the kind of damage this could do. And maybe she and Colby, you know, came to an understanding. I don't really know.
Yeah.
Those charges went away very quickly.
Yeah.
So then, of course, the Netflix documentary came out. I will admit I have not watched it.
I haven't either.
I've stayed away from
the sensationalism. I didn't watch the Lifetime movie either.
I watched it only to report upon it, and it was awful.
You did take that one for the team.
I took one for the team on that. Well, you know, the hard thing about it is that this case is not resolved. This is still an active murder investigation. Mm-hmm. And is it okay to be putting out documentaries and Lifetime movies about a story that doesn't yet have an ending?
I'm not loving it. I haven't all along. Because again, there is a lot of concern, should we say voluminous concern, about
Don Pryor's favorite word.
About being able to come up with a jury pool that isn't already deeply immersed in this case. Mm-hmm. It's already been moved to Boise, away from this area where it should have been tried. Mm-hmm. Now they're taking it 5 hours away because they're trying to get to a cleaner jury pool. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they're going to have their work cut out for them in finding a jury pool that really works.
They are. And, you know, there are elements of fiction in every one of the films and documentaries and things that have been produced about this case. There are elements of fiction. There's conjecture. Mm-hmm. There's assumption. There's sensationalism in them.
Yeah.
We don't want that. You know what? We don't need any of that. This case is as horrific as you can possibly imagine, all on its own, just with what we know from the actual facts.
Absolutely. But the last thing we want is a mistrial.
Right.
Or, you know, or an appeal to be successful because of all of these things. No.
Yeah.
We want these monsters to go away forever and ever and ever.
Right.
So it is challenging.
Mm-hmm. We want ironclad convictions. You know, I mean, we say that as though that we know that they're guilty and we know that they're innocent until proven guilty. But, you know, it's not like there isn't much evidence against them. There's mountains of evidence against them. But definitely, we want them to be able to have clean trials that don't have grounds for appeal, that don't have grounds for being overturned. You know, we want their legal rights as protected as possible.
Right. Well, so we should all want
that. Do this once.
Absolutely. We should all want anyone who's charged with a crime for all of their rights to be protected and upheld. We should all want that, because if this was your family member or you on trial for a crime that you did or didn't commit, you would certainly want your rights to be protected. And we can't pick and choose. That has to be fair for everyone. That has to be straight across the board for everyone, regardless of what they're accused of, how much evidence is against them, period.
Right. Absolutely. We don't want anything interfering with that.
Yeah.
And so we will continue to advocate for, you know, whatever the courts feel that they need to do to protect the legal rights of Chad and Lori.
Absolutely.
We're going to advocate for that. And I know it's not always a very popular opinion, but.
Right. And that's not because we are siding with Chad and Lori.
Oh, heavens no.
It's because we're siding with the law, with what's right. Yeah.
Right. And we're siding with, you know, allowing the system to do its job, because in this case, it is. It's slow. It's frustrating. There have been some major bumps. And a lot of that comes from a very small county, well, two counties that are trying this case with, you know, not a lot of experience in this kind of mayhem. But in the long run, we have to let the justice system do what it's going to do. And I'm not going to say that that's true in every case, because it's not. But in this case, I do feel that it will prevail. Mm-hmm. So we go from Colby and the drama around that.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, so then we go to the media sued to get cameras back into the courtroom. Mm-hmm. And we did watch this hearing. We did live stream it. And unfortunately, they were not successful. And they were not successful, I think, because of the approach that the attorney took in the hearing to make this happen.
Yep.
This attorney immediately got on the bad side of the judge and stayed on the bad side of the judge the whole time. Mm-hmm. And you could tell from minute one that
they this were was not going well. Yep.
Yeah.
He was quite unprepared too.
He was.
And was not a good orator. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were so many ands and ums and pauses and stops and confusion. And
he was disrespectful, and he implied that the judge was trying to, you know, pick on the media. And, you know, we've learned, we've watched Judge Boyce a lot in the last few years, and we have learned that that kind of attitude does not get too far with him.
No.
And it didn't have to go that way, you know?
No.
I mean, honestly, the right of the people is there. Mm-hmm. That isn't really what this attorney argued. It was more about this is intentional on the part of the courts to, you know, withhold information from the media. And he took a weird tack that was the wrong one.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, local and national media kind of banded together on this. And
it paid the wrong guy to come into court and represent them. Yeah, they
definitely did. So then we move forward to a statement that came out from Larry and
Kay.
Larry and Kay Woodcock, who are JJ's grandparents, with their concern about why the bodies have still not been released. Children have not been released to their families. They have not been buried. No funerals. None of those things have been able to happen. And that this is a tough one. I mean, I think we all have a lot of empathy for the family and entirely understand why they want to be able to put these children to rest.
Yeah.
But the courts are not doing that. The prosecution is not doing nobody. These children's bodies have still not been released. And this was an argument that happened back in August. And I get it. It sucks for the family very much. But I think there's this fear that they send those bodies away and then they are not evidence anymore.
Right, right.
And they're just not ready to say that they have everything they need from those autopsies.
Right. And really, do they want that? No.
No.
Nobody wants that. But Kay and Larry are frustrated. This has taken ridiculously long.
Right.
You know, they're ready to put this behind them and see justice served. And it just keeps taking longer. It's taken an immense toll on these poor people.
They're very
tired of it. But you compare that, contrast that to a current horror playing out here in Idaho, which is the stabbing death of four students in Moscow, Idaho, at the University of Idaho. That happened 2 weeks ago, and those bodies have already been buried. Released to their families nearly immediately.
Yeah. Which honestly, I find super concerning. They don't even have a suspect in that case yet.
No.
And yet their primary evidence, the victims themselves, are in the ground.
Somewhere cremated. Stress. Yeah. It's wild to contrast that case to this one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the Daybell Vallow case has been handled with extreme amounts of caution at every turn. And this is definitely another that we see playing out. But, you know, it's so hard to not really feel for the family too, that this sucks.
Yeah.
They can't at least just bury their loved ones. So then moving forward, when we hadn't heard from John Pryor on behalf of Chad Daybell for a while.
He's been pretty quiet.
Things have been pretty quiet, yes. And then he files several things in a row. One of them being that he, in fact, does want cameras in the courtroom for trial. Now, he waited clear until after the media sued the court to then come out and try to bring this up again, which seemed extremely unwise on his part, considering the judge's reaction to these things. Mm-hmm. But he also asked for some other things, too. He asked for the trial to be postponed. It was supposed to start in January of 2023. Mm-hmm. He asked for it to be postponed, and he asked again for the trial to be severed so that Chad and Rory would not be tried together. That had already been ruled on once, and he decided to go for that again. The judge immediately shot down the cameras, and I'm sure in the back of his head was like, where the hell have you been, dude? We have just had a huge, you know, argument over this, and he'd never even responded, and then files his own brief.
Yep.
So that was shot down immediately. Then we get the request for a postponement and the request for the severance. And right about that same time, there are whisperings about Lori's competency.
Again.
And which there was
should have been after that display in court.
Well, there were surprised. I'm sure that's where a lot of it came from. So in the midst of this, Lori's attorneys had asked to have her evaluated again. Then John Pryor asks for severance, and he also asks for a postponement. So these are things we're kind of guessing about, but I think that it tracks with what's going on, is that the judge did not rule on John Pryor's requests, other than the cameras in the courtroom, until after there had been this evaluation of Lori. Because at this point, if Lori was in fact going back into the state hospital, he would probably have to have considered severing those cases.
Yeah.
So, you know, of course, we don't know what happened with most of this, because this was all behind closed doors, because it has to do with Lori's mental health. But it comes out that she is, in fact, competent and will stand trial. But in the midst of that, the judge had suspended the original trial date.
Yes.
So no trial in January. He hadn't ruled on the severance until there was a hearing about her. They were one day apart. They were like 2 days in a row.
Yep.
There was a hearing about her competency. And the next day, Pryor again said that it would be very damaging to their defense and the angle they were taking, because they were going to bring into court Lori's prior bad acts and all of these things. And this is why he wanted a severance. So those two hearings happened back to back.
Yeah.
Then we hear that, yes, Lori is in fact competent to stand trial. Mm-hmm. And we hear that, no, he will not be severing the trials. Yes. However, he did grant a postponement. So there is not a trial date right now.
No.
We've heard not whisperings yet about March, but we don't know.
Mr. Pryor wanted to push it back until October of 2023.
Yeah.
He wants another year. My God, John, what have you been doing?
I mean, that is always the question, because it's the same song over and over again from him, that this, you know, the evidence is voluminous. He needs more time. It's just him. And the state has all of this help. And, you know, I mean, the reality is that he doesn't seem to have procured much help for himself. And so he's just constantly bitching. But it's kind of like, well, okay, but you had the same argument 6 months ago. What have you done in the last 6 months?
Right.
You know? So
let's talk a little about Lori and what has happened with her mental health as far as we can see.
Yes.
So as you know, she spent 9 months in a mental health facility here in Idaho, getting, as we said, spiffed up and ready to come back to court.
Yes.
So in February, she was back. But before that, there was a hearing with the state hospital because they were going to, they needed some support from the court in being able to forcibly medicate Lori.
Yes.
Which means she was unwilling to take her medication.
Right.
And in order to forcibly medicate, you have to have a judge that says, yep, do it. Yeah. And the judge, we believe, said, yes, do it. Mm-hmm. A lot of Lori's stuff, you know, there's a little subtlety here and there that we can pick up on, but most of it is behind closed doors because those are her HIPAA rights. But mm-hmm. so we know that there had been, or we believe there had been an order in the jail or in the hospital at some point after that first 90-day stay, mm-hmm. during the 180-day stay, the second one, that they were forcibly medicating. And then Lori got spiffed up and came out of jail, or came back to jail ready to go. Mm-hmm. Well, since then, her mental health has declined and declined and declined. Mm-hmm. That display in court, while many of you felt like she was being a disrespectful bee, she was crazy. She mm-hmm. was off her rocker. She was hallucinating. She was mm-hmm. not sure where she was or what she was doing. Yeah. What we've heard from the jail is that she has gotten more and more wild ever since, mm-hmm. Filling notebooks upon notebooks of prophecy every day. All of this wild smiling and laughing and kind of maniacal, you know, behavior that is getting more and more concerning. Mm-hmm. We also know that she's been refusing to be medicated. Yes. Because again, all the jail can do is give her her meds. If she refuses to take them, cheeks them, spits them out, there's not much they can do about that without a court order.
Yeah.
Even then, there's not much the jail can do about that because there's nobody at the jail that is qualified to give her injections.
Right. And, which is likely how they would force medicate her, is give her injectable medication.
Yeah.
Or liquid and be mm-hmm. present and force her to swallow it. But honestly, you know, mm-hmm. injectables are generally the standard for mm-hmm. forcible medication.
So since they have been to court here just recently and ruled her competent, we don't know what orders would have been included in that because, of course, it's sealed. We suspect that there was some kind of order or permission from the court to forcibly medicate. Mm-hmm. Clearly, Lori can be rehabilitated. You know, she can be spiffed up mm-hmm. as long as she's medicated. That is certainly possible. You know, so we believe that's probably what's happening.
Yeah. They would honestly probably have to bring in a nurse mm-hmm. that could administer that kind of medication. The thing is, the injectable medications there, a lot of them are monthly. Mm-hmm. And so it's not like it's an all, you have to have a nurse there every single day. That's not true. They can be monthly or they can be every 2 weeks or weekly. Like mm-hmm. there are ways to do it that are not a big hardship. But yeah, I mean, this is part of your legal right as an adult that you don't have, that you have the right to not be forcibly medicated unless the courts say, well, in this particular case, mm-hmm. because here's the reality. If Lori is convicted and goes to prison, they will not forcibly medicate her. She could just be wacko then. Mm-hmm. If she wants to be, that's her choice. But during mm-hmm. this period, they have the right to forcibly medicate her so that she can be competent to stand trial.
Right. Because being competent means that she understands the charges against her and can participate in her own defense. Mm-hmm. And so if she's displaying tendencies that make the court feel like she cannot participate in her own defense, and competency, is evaluated from mental health professionals, and they say, no, she's definitely not capable of that at this time, then it's back to the hospital and another right. stay.
Yeah. So what had happened is around the time that her attorneys asked to have her reevaluated, they also asked for her trial to be suspended mm-hmm. until they knew could she in fact stand trial. So her case was suspended. Chad's was postponed. So then we totally lose the January trial date, mm-hmm. which for the community and the family is really frustrating because mm-hmm. it was like, we're finally getting there. We're mm-hmm. going to get to a point where this is finally going to go to trial. And this is going to be over for the people who are living it every day.
Yeah.
And then we had another statement from the Woodcocks about how angry and disappointed they are about this situation, that yet again it's getting delayed. And yet again, we're still, the Woodcocks have said that they feel like that Lori and Chad have more rights than the children did. And I mean, in a way, that is true. But it is how our legal system works. And we have to preserve their rights. Bottom line, in every single case like this, in every single murder trial, whatever it is, every one of us, not just Chad and Lori, but we all have legal rights, constitutional rights, that have to be upheld. Because if they're not, that means mistrials and appeals and overturning trial, you know, convictions and things. And so again, it sucks, it's painful, but it is the thing that has to happen in order for these charges to stand, for the convictions to stand. So let's see. We talked about a lot of these things. Oh, and then, you know, probably the most recent thing after all of that came out is that then the judge did come back and say, yeah, we're not severing these trials. They will be tried together.
And then just last week, filings from Lori's attorneys yet again. And this is something we have heard over and over from John Pryor. We heard it from Mark Means. All of them continuing to accuse the prosecution of not turning over all of the evidence. That's a big problem. It's a big concern. And so essentially what it appears that has happened is that the prosecution has given them multiple terabytes of evidence.
Five terabytes.
It is an insane amount of information. And said, here you go. This is everything we have. And they're coming back saying, okay, but what are you actually going to use in court? And the prosecution saying, we don't have to tell you that. We have to give you everything we have. Here it is. Have fun. And they're saying, no, it's too much. It's too much information. We want to see very specific witness interviews, witness statements. We want to know the where's, the when's, the why's, the how's. We want some very specific information here. And the prosecution's going, we gave it to you. It's all here. But they want them to narrow it down a little bit. And the prosecution continues to say, that's not our responsibility. We have given you everything. There's no Brady violation here. We've given you everything you need. You figure it out. And again, the defense is coming back saying, no, you show us exactly where these interviews are that we want to see. You show us everything we want to know. We want it to be summed up. So, for example, there could be a file that has written interviews with certain people and a different file that has the, you know, other information about that, and a different file that has a video of that, and a different file that has the audio of that, and a different file that has the details of how this interview happened and who was present. They want it all tied up with a bow, you know. They want it all in one specific spot. This is everything we need to know about this. Right here, right now, they feel like that's their right to receive it that way. And the prosecution says they don't feel like they should have to do that for them. We'll see what the judge says. Yeah, but that's been an ongoing issue all along.
It has. And, you know, so far, the judge has sided with the prosecution every time. That all their job is to turn over the information, and it is up to the defense to sort it out. Also, the prosecution does not have to tell the defense what their case is going to be. They do not have to say, these are the things we're going to use against your client. They
don't have to. 100 witnesses that we've spoken to. But we don't have to tell you which ones we're going to call. They might not even know. Now, I'm going to say they probably do at this point.
I mean, I'll bet they do.
This was supposed to go to trial in a month. I'm sure that they do know, but they don't actually have to tell them.
No, they don't. And, you know, I mean, yes, there are three prosecutors on this. Two prosecutors' offices with staff. I get that there's a lot of support. However, you know, Lori's attorneys are public defenders. They have an office with staff as well. And then you have John Pryor, the Lone Ranger.
And one man band. Yep.
You know what's happened here, I think, and some of this has been legitimized and some of this is kind of conjecture, but I think what's happened here is that Chad could be deemed indigent at any time. He doesn't have anything left. John Pryor literally owns his house. Mm-hmm. It's his name is on the deed. Like, he doesn't have anything. So
his name is the only name on the deed to Chad's house.
So they could have him declared indigent, which would give him a criminal defense attorney who is a public defender, who is experienced in trying death penalty cases. And then John Pryor could stay on as second chair. Mm-hmm. But if that were to happen, John Pryor would not be first chair because mm-hmm. he is not a death penalty certified attorney.
Yeah.
And so Pryor continues to just hang on tightly to fame, glory, notoriety. I don't know.
That and payment, not, the house. Yeah.
Right. Well, even then, I'll bet that house is his either way. I mean, he's been he's been defending Chad for a long time now.
Right.
But so far, they have refused to do that, which means that it is up to Pryor on his own to have the resources to go through all of this evidence. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I think he's being really stubborn, and I think so is Chad. Mm-hmm. I think it's really stupid to think that Pryor is going to be able to go forward with this. And it's a concern. It is a concern for later appeals for him having inadequate counsel.
I mean, it is, except for that he's chosen it.
It's
not like the state gave him this attorney. Right. You know, he's paying for it privately, which means he said it's okay.
Right. He did. However,
but it also means Pryor will have to pay for expert witnesses were he to call any. You know, that guy from Boise State that's overseeing for the defense the consumptive DNA. Mm-hmm. Pryor will have to pay for Chad's portion of that bill.
Right. I mean,
there's a lot that he will have to pay for in order to try this case that he doesn't seem to be getting paid for. Mm-hmm. I did wonder, and we have no idea what the arrangement is, but Chad's kids are still living in that house.
Yeah.
And so are they paying rent to Pryor?
Right.
Because not only, you know, because there's other things that you have to consider. I mean, the taxes have to be paid. The insurance has to be paid. There's, you know,
there is one.
Right. I think there's not a mortgage. I think we decided that was paid off with life insurance money. We think. But yes, there's certainly bills attached to the house. So who's paying those? Mm-hmm. Are they paying rent to Pryor to be able to live in this house right now? Right. We don't know. It's really, truly probably none of our business, but it's an interesting consideration.
Well, it's
attorneys
really
that have looked at this case. Well, yeah. Attorneys that have looked at this case are dumbfounded. They've never heard of putting the name or, you know, a client's house in their own name to preserve it. For quite a while, Tammy's name was on the deed alongside of Pryor's, which really puzzled people. Now, finally, Tammy's name is off and it's just Pryor's. It's an interesting situation. Really interesting.
It is. But going forward, I mean, is Pryor really thinking he's going to carry this all the way through? And I mean, could they bring another attorney in at this point that's had no experience with this case leading up to now? I mean, at this point, it appears that he's going to try to do this on his own, mm-hmm. which is really concerning because that mm-hmm. could be grounds for appeal later.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
It is. But that's where we're at with that. But then the last thing that has been going on with Lori is that her attorneys are challenging the constitutionality of the death penalty.
Yes.
Which particularly it's very timely. We've mm-hmm. talked about this a ton on the show, but there are so many failed executions, mm-hmm. problematic executions that have occurred throughout the country mm-hmm. for you know, the drugs, they don't work like they used to, mm-hmm. or you can't get them at all. We've talked about the Gerald Pizzuto case here in Idaho. Mm-hmm. He was given another death date of December 15th, even though the guy's dying in prison. And that's now been vacated because Idaho does not have the drugs to carry out this execution.
No.
So it's interesting, but Lori's attorneys are taking this opportunity to yet again challenge the constitutionality of the death penalty. Yep.
And it's not even for, it's not for the reasons that you would think. It's not because of Lori's mental health. It's not because of the availability of drugs. It's because of the way the jury handles cases that have been declared death penalty cases. That the juries are not instructed correctly. That the juries perhaps have their bias is painted because of it being a death penalty case before the case ever starts. That shouldn't be a part of their consideration. Basically, what they're saying is that when it is a death penalty case, juries end up not considering, is this person innocent or guilty throughout the course of the trial, but does this person deserve to die for this? As in, if it's a death penalty case, statistically, juries are going into it believing that the person is guilty before the trial even begins. There's a form, or not a form, well, it is a form, I guess. It's a questionnaire and a series of questions and things that happen with jurors that are chosen for them to be certified, death penalty certified, when a trial starts. And they had already filed a couple of months ago to not death penalty certify the jury because of this very bias. And now they're saying, you know what, actually, screw this. This is not constitutional, and here's the reasons why. The brief that they filed was over 60 pages long. I read a bulk of it. It is really interesting. They make a compelling argument. Why now? Why this case? Well, because it's high profile, you know? And it's interesting that they've chosen this as their moment, you know, to argue it. But both of these men are death penalty certified. They've been around the block with the death penalty a few times here. So I'm really interested in what they're doing with this. Really, really interested. And also the arguments that they brought are things that I had never considered. But again, well-backed. There's a certain case that they're citing throughout most of it, as well as others. But it's interesting to really interesting to see where they'll go from here with that specific argument.
It really is. And is that going to slow this down even further? It may, you know, because if they get shot down, they may appeal higher and higher and higher. I mean, this has gone before the Supreme Court before. And I don't know. It's a very interesting thing to, because I feel that very much, that if a case has already been determined to be death penalty eligible, that instantly creates bias in a jury. They're right about
that. Sure.
You know, and I have been on the fence about the death penalty for a long time, and I am now fully against the death penalty. I don't think that it is the way that a civilized society should be handling criminals. And if we, you know, I always take it back to, it's like hitting your kids to teach them not to hit.
Or biting your kids to teach them not to bite.
So we're going to murder people to teach them not to murder. Like, that doesn't make sense, and it doesn't have the effect in society that you think it would.
It also clogs the courts up for decades, literally decades, with
appeals. It costs billions and billions of dollars, the appeals around death penalty, because there's so many. They're allowed so many appeals because there's always that fear in the back of your head that you're going to execute an innocent person. And it has happened. And it's probably happened way more than we even know.
Absolutely.
So,
well, especially because with the current advent of DNA and genealogical DNA and all of the DNA work that's happening, we're seeing people released from prison on a monthly that have been there for decades, and that may have been on the may have been on death row, that have now been exonerated because of DNA.
So there's a lot to consider here, but that throws a major monkey wrench in the works. And so we're going to have to see where that goes, you know, and how that's going to impact the scheduling of the trial, the new trial date. Are they going to have to review this and resolve it before that can happen? That's a big question.
Well, certainly. They can't, they really can't move forward with anything, really. Well, no, you know, in consideration of a jury.
Right. So that's where we're at. We felt like, you know, we know where we're at, but we realized that you don't always hear our update shows and it's always just little snippets here and there. And so we feel like every 6 months or so, we need to just sit down and say, okay, since the last time we did a full episode on this, where are we now? Because if not, many of our listeners are missing information. Mm-hmm. You know, we're lucky to be local. Our local news covers this very heavily, you know, so we get immediate information when things change. So we thought it was time to share that information with you all again.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah.
Well, this is our Monday episode. We'll be back Tuesday and Wednesday with other great episodes. Lots of stuff happening right now. We have a lot of stories to tell.
Yes.
And we will be back with those. And of course, we'll be back with our live case updates live stream on Wednesday night as well. It is at 7 p.m. Mountain on our YouTube channel and on our Facebook group. You can join us in either place, or of course, we do post it after the fact if you're not able to listen live. And we do appreciate you. Please be sure to like, subscribe, share, comment. Helps us grow. Check us out over on Patreon. We're True Crime Squad on Patreon. We do two extra episodes a month just for our patrons. For a nominal fee, you get extra content, and it also helps to support us in continuing to do the work that we do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know it. We are the True Crime Squad. Thanks for being here.
Take care.